the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm Ben Anderson.
I'm Chandler Holtz.
We are recording this on April 2nd with a little less than 2 weeks left in the regular season for the Utah Jazz. What is it, 7 games left? Mm-hmm. 6 after tonight when they host the Cleveland Cavaliers. As always, we will look at the week that was, the week coming up ahead. We'll give our Jazz grades and whatever the weekly news was, and then we'll address your Utah Jazz mailbag questions. So we always appreciate you following us on Twitter at Ben's Hoops, at Chandler Holt KSL. That's basically all of our social media across Instagram, wherever you want to find us. And then, of course, read us at kslsports.com. Find us on Twitter, KSL Sports, Instagram, KSL Sports, TikTok, KSL Sports. What did I miss? Threads, Instagram. We got it all. So, yeah, make sure to follow us. There's a lot of news that comes out. And then subscribe to the weekly newsletter that comes out every Tuesday. Get some access to some early information about the Utah Jazz. All right, Chandler, where are we starting?
Yeah, we'll do a 3-game recap. Jazz played 3 games in the past week, went 0-3, started the week with a rough 118-111 loss to San Antonio. The Jazz actually outscored the Spurs in the second, third, and fourth quarter, but lost by 14 in the first, even went down 24-8 to start the game.
Yeah.
And then couldn't come back. And then lost to Houston. It was a 1-point game, 101-100. Utah wins the first quarter by 10 points, but then Houston wins the next 3 quarters, so vice versa. And then the Rockets pull out the win there. And then to end the week, one more game against Sacramento. Big loss, 127-106. And is, again, it feels like a common thing for the Jazz recently, just lose one big quarter in the third. They got outscored 39-25.
Yeah, they gave up a 21-2 run. I think the game was tied. Yeah. And then a 21-2 run, and it was a 19-point game, and the game was over. So they are certainly susceptible to that because they obviously don't have a full 48 minutes of NBA play every night at all 5 positions. So that's been the major issue for them. Some bright spots, and overall not a terrible week as far as watching, but we'll talk about that when we get into our weekly grades. I don't know. Was there anything notable from the week? Like, the Houston game was fun.
Yeah.
Houston is now having to pay the piper. They went on this long winning streak, and it was easy to be like, wow, Houston's making a run for this and maybe going to overtake Golden State. And then you looked at, like, oh, well, yeah, they played the Jazz a bunch of times. Like, that's not fair. And Golden State plays the Jazz now twice before the end of the season. So where at one point I was pretty ambitious that I thought Houston was going to overtake Golden State, I don't think that's going to happen. They're 2 games back with 7 games to play. I think Golden State owns the tiebreaker, and Golden State plays the Jazz twice. Like, there's just so hard to make up that amount of ground. So Houston had fun against the Jazz and still almost lost that game. It was kind of a red flag for me.
Take away from the Houston game, the Rockets shot 38.5% from the floor and 31% from three. Pretty bad, but 20-10 turnovers in favor of them and 27-13 points off turnovers.
Yeah, I guess the low part there, and again, we can talk about this in our weekly grades, was Keontae George had probably the worst game of his career to date. And even Bryce Sensabaugh was bad, 0-8 from the floor, 0-7 from the three-point line, but did some other things. But by far the most frustrated I've seen Keontae George this season. He is a head-up type of kid. He does not let, he doesn't kind of let the rough times get to him. I'm sure they do privately, but he's pretty good about keeping his head up. And even then, like, we got in the locker room and he got dressed and was gone and didn't talk to the media. And look, we didn't stop him. If I had stopped to ask him questions, I'm sure he would have talked, but everyone just kind of let him go. And on his way out the door, John Collins was like, keep your head up. Like, you're fine. Like, this is part of it. So it is. This is part of the learning process. Not fun necessarily if you're a Jazz fan, but you have to have those games as well. It's not always gumdrops and lollipops, as they say. Like, there's just bad days in the NBA, and he had one. And, you know, got a little bit embarrassed by Jalen Green. Got to the argument with Jalen Green. Both got teed up. I don't get the impression the Jazz players are fans of Jalen Green. We tried to ask him about the Jalen Green, no one specific, a little bit. And they were like, well, you know, what can you learn from Jalen Green? They're like, let's learn how to stop him. They didn't want to compliment Jalen. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, in that game, Keontae George, 6 points, 6 assists, 6 turnovers, 3-for-12 from the floor. Had the second worst plus-minus, only behind Bryce Sensabaugh, who you said, who shot 0-for-8.
And didn't close the game on the floor. Closed the game on the bench. Yeah. And Will Hardy said after, you know, sometimes the best thing is to let these guys sit and watch. And it wasn't a punishment, but he wasn't playing well. And he was getting into his own head, and he was only making it worse by trying to fix the problems as opposed to just, like, running the stuff. He was trying to make up for his mistakes, and that's a young person thing to do.
We can use this as a transition to some standings watch. The three losses makes Utah's losing streak up to 9, which is the third longest in the NBA, behind Toronto at 13 and Portland at 10. Jazz are still 12th in the West at 29-46, 4 games from the 12th-seeded Memphis, and only half a game from Brooklyn in their 8th-worst record.
Yeah, they actually overtook them there for a minute, or were tied with them there for a minute. Brooklyn played last night and lost. Brooklyn is going to overtake the Jazz. They still have games against Detroit. They have games against Toronto. Toronto is trying to lose because they need to get to the 6th pick. Otherwise, I think it goes to San Antonio. So they're trying to make sure they get to that sixth pick, and then they have to hope they don't get leapt in the lottery. So they are really trying to lose games to hold on to that playoff spot, or that lottery pick, excuse me. The Nets, on the other hand, don't own their lottery pick. Mm-hmm. They don't own a draft pick. It goes to Houston this year. So they have no reason to lose games. So when they play Detroit and when they play Toronto, I think there's at least two more wins on their schedule, and there could be more. They're going to win games, and I honestly don't know if the Jazz are going to win another game. In fact, tonight's game might be the most winnable game left on the Jazz schedule, and we can look at the week ahead.
Upcoming week for the Jazz. Tonight they're going to host Cleveland, no Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, that's the news that just came out. In fact, they're pretty beat up. Let me pull up the entire injury report, but keep going.
In Los Angeles to face the Clippers on Friday, and then closing out the week in Golden State on Sunday.
Golden State's playing well. Yep. It's easy to look back and say, like, I know Jazz fans were frustrated with the Simone Fontecchio and Kelly Olynyk trade, saying, like, wow, could you have stayed competitive and, made a push for it? Jazz were 26-26. If they were 500 right now, like, do you have the standings pulled up?
Yes.
What is Golden State on? Aren't they like 6 games above 500?
Yeah, 40-34.
So, like, there's a real chance the Jazz might have still been 5 games back of the play-in, at this point. And then you're just 5 games back of the play-in. Like, you're not even in the play-in, which means you're not even in the playoffs. So you're conveying your draft pick to Oklahoma City, which I know some Jazz fans wanted to, but you might have missed the playoffs by 5 games mm-hmm. and not traded those guys. And then you wouldn't have had the 10th pick or what the Jazz, I think, are gearing up for, which is the 8th pick. You wouldn't have had the 28th pick, and you wouldn't have had the 31st pick, and you still might have lost Kelly Olynyk and Simone Fontecchio in the offseason, and then you just wouldn't have had a draft pick at all. It's like, well, how are you getting better? Yep. Like, how are you going to get better this offseason? Just by trading other future draft picks? Like, that's actually pretty bad asset management. In retrospect, like, it's not fun. This has not been good basketball. Jazz are 3-20 since the trade deadline, and it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Like, you've got assets to play with to get better. You've got that cleared up money, that $30 million that we're going to have to go to Kelly Olynyk and Simone Fontecchio to bring him back. And you can sign a bunch of 26-year-olds or draft players and have people who fit the timeline. It really does make a lot of sense. I know some fans are really frustrated by it.
Yeah, I got into a Twitter or X exchange the other day with a Jazz fan who was basically arguing that the Jazz shouldn't have sold at the deadline, saying that in order to get to the top of the mountain, you still need some playoff appearances and some playoff success leading up to that, which I agree with. But my argument was that the Jazz's core is not good enough. Of course, they would get bounced in the first round, but it's basically like Laurie and Keontae, maybe a couple others, Taylor Hendricks, yeah. You could argue will be in a Jazz championship run if it comes in the next 5 years.
Right.
But I think you just need a lot more.
Kelly would not be a part of it. Yeah. Simone would not be a part of it. Even by the time 3-4 years from now, the Jazz are actually going to be like good again. None of those guys. I mean, some of those guys might not be in the NBA anymore. Yeah. So, I agree with you. Here's who's not playing tonight for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Ty Jerome is out. He's had right ankle surgery. That's nothing. He's not a player. Donovan Mitchell is out, as we just mentioned. Isaac Okoro is out, which is a name I'd keep an eye on for Jazz in the offseason. Mm-hmm. We'll do some of that, some of these kind of names to keep an eye on in the offseason as we get there. Otherwise, nothing major. Darius Garland is playing and Evan Mobley's playing. So they still have some stars. And Sam Merrill making his return to Utah. So we will see him play. So Jazz are still far more shorthanded without Lauri Markkanen, John Collins, and Jordan Clarkson tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And still, like I said, might be the most winnable game left. They do still play the Houston Rockets here in Salt Lake City. Houston might be out of the playoff race at that point. So maybe there's another win on the Jazz schedule. Mm-hmm. But looking at it right now, I would bet there's not.
You want to get into our grades and then take a break?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. So every week we give our grades for the Jazz on veterans, young player standings, and fun factor. 0-3 week. At this point, the Jazz's losses are better than wins, so we typically give them the good grades for that in the standings. Let's start with the vets.
Colin Sexton is playing extremely well. He didn't shoot the three that well this week, which has generally been a strength of his, only 23%. But, he's averaging 25 points a game. He's shooting 53% from the floor overall, 6 assists, turnovers at 3 a game, which is not super high, but not terrible. Colin continues to be a very good player mm-hmm. and somebody who I think could be a piece of the future long-term. We'll address some of that coming up in the mailbag. Lauri Markkanen only plays one game, and it was fine. He did Lauri Markkanen stuff, 25 points, 6 rebounds. He's just a really good player when he's on the floor. He continues to be really good. And John Collins has been sneaky good lately. Again, we keep talking about how good John has been. 24 points, only appeared twice, but shot 62% from the floor, 66% from 3, 8 rebounds. He's kind of figuring it out. I kind of think John Collins knows what the Jazz want from him. And that doesn't mean I know he's going to be around next year, but if he's around next year, I wouldn't be surprised if he's better next season than he has been this year.
Yeah, definitely. Looking at Colin Sexton, of course, he's been playing really well as of late, like you said, averaging 25 over the past however long. But I was looking at his season stats. He's averaging 18.8 points, 4.9 assists on almost 50-40 shooting splits. Like, definitely yeah. most improved candidate for the Jazz.
And the three-point shot is way up. Yes. Like, he's taking 4 a game now, I think, something like that. Last year, he was only taking 2. So he was shooting effectively, but it was like no one was respecting it. If he's going to take 4 a game and hit 40%, you have to guard him, which creates floor space. Also, something I'm going to ask Will Hardy about tonight, his finishing at the rim is through the roof, mm-hmm. and he was not that good at it previously, and he's really good at it now. And I'm actually curious if that's a John Collins thing, where if Walker Kessler's there, there's always a big body down there that's hard for Colin Sexton. Again, it's easy to hammer John Collins, but it's like he's 5 out. Like, you can put him on the perimeter, and somebody does kind of have to at least give a little bit of room, which might help some of the guards like Keontae and then certainly Colin Sexton. So, I don't know. B?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a bad week. I don't think the veterans were the problem for the Jazz, and we didn't see Jordan Clarkson, and we barely saw Lowry.
Yep. And in Lowry's one game, he had 25-6, so yep. not a bad game there at all. I think B is good. Next for the young guys, definitely going to be a much lower grade. Keontae in the first game against the Spurs, he put up 14-8. Not a bad game there, but then, as we know, struggled mightily, both of the rookies, in the Jazz's game against the Rockets. Taylor Hendricks had 8 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks in that game. Not bad at all. And then against the Kings, Taylor Hendricks played great, and Bryce Sensabaugh had 22.
Yeah, those were their big games. Yeah. They set career highs there. So that's going to boost the grade. Keontae has struggled this last week. Keontae George averaging 12.7 points, 5.3 assists, but 4.3 turnovers. His turnovers have become an issue. Mm-hmm. He's not shooting well, 31% from the floor, 25% from 3. Taylor Hendricks, as we mentioned, 11.3 points per game over the last 3 games. But love this, 47% from the 3-point line on 5.5 attempts.
Yeah.
That's a great number. That's exactly what you want him to be as an NBA player. If he can take 5 or 6 a game as a big guy and shoot over 40% with what he's going to turn into as a defensive player, that's really high mark. And then Bryce Sensabaugh bounced back again against Sacramento. Took 10 threes, hit 5 of them. Look, what do you need in the NBA? You want floor spacers. Like, that's it. That's kind of the thing. And you can find a way to stick in the NBA. And, yeah, of course, you want stars. You don't expect to draft a star at 28 like they did when they drafted Bryce Sensabaugh. You hope you have a guy who can stick in the NBA. If you can take 10 threes and make 5 in a game, like we talk about Sam Merrill, like, those guys find a way to stick, and then we'll see if Bryce Sensabaugh can do some of the other things, like some of the passing and some of the rebounding he showed recently. And his defense, I don't think, is quite as bad as was advertised early in the season. So, I thought Taylor Hendricks and Bryce Sensabaugh were pretty good.
Yes.
And maybe that boosts the grade up to like a C+.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's also have to mention Walker Kessler had a rough week.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Walker.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there. Not playing a whole lot. And sometimes I'm like, are they not playing him because they're trying to lose games? And mm-hmm. if you play him too much, he's going to win. And then he plays a lot. And you're like, oh, he had 6 points and 5 rebounds in 30 minutes. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, so and then they'll go back to playing him 8.5 minutes. So, okay, we'll go a little bit lower.
Maybe like a C-.
Yeah, C-.
But
not terrible mm-hmm. from Bryce Sensabaugh. Pretty good from Taylor Hendricks and Keontae George in a funk.
Yeah, mostly low lights, but some high points, especially in that Kings game. Next up, standings. 0-3, half a game from the 8th worst record in the NBA.
A+.
A+.
Yeah, you did it. You are tanking. You're on the 5th longest losing streak in franchise history. Climbed to 4th if they lose tonight to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's see, if they lose, there's 7 games left. They're at 9. So they could end the season on what would be the 2nd longest losing streak in team history. They've mm-hmm. lost 18 in a row at one point, but this would be the longest since, like, the bad Jazz, like the New Orleans Jazz. So this would be pretty historic if they lose out.
Next fun factor. I feel like we've said this a couple times this year, but I think last week was one of the least fun weeks of the season. And then this week, definitely better. Not overly fun by any means. You went 0-3.
I thought Sacramento game was not that painful mm-hmm. because the first half was good, and then I think if Jazz fans wanted to watch for the rookies, that was good. The Houston game was ugly, but it was close. And then, yeah, you didn't see anything against San Antonio that was all that great.
Yeah.
That was a pretty ugly game because they were down 29-15 after one. I don't know. B-?
I was thinking C+, B-.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, these are pretty mediocre grades, but they're a mediocre team, and it's a mediocre product right now.
Yep.
Like, even the fun things to watch if you're a fan, like the rookies, have been so-so. So, yeah, I think that's where they are. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into our Jazz mailbag questions. Stick around. More Jazz Notes coming up next. Welcome back to the Jazz Notes podcast. Ben Anderson, Chandler Holt. All right, before we get to the mailbag, Chandler, let's get to the quick news and notes of the week for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, honestly, a Couple points of news. It's been kind of slow, but not this week. First up, Jazz general manager Justin Zanuck is going to undergo a kidney transplant. His surgery is today.
Yeah, he's doing that today. Expects to be out. He said 3-ish weeks. Justin, just take as much time as you need, my man. Like, it's fine. You know, like, come back when you're ready and take your time. But obviously sending our best to Justin and his family and the whole Utah Jazz family. I quite enjoy Justin Zanuck, so rooting for him and his health, obviously. He's a human being and a nice one at that. So sending our best to Justin Zanuck and his family. I'm sure that's a very difficult situation. He's been dealing with kidney failure throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm. So, again, important to remember, like, everyone has real lives. All these people have real things they're going through on top of doing these high-stress jobs. So, shout out to Justin Zanuck and sending our best.
Next up, some former Jazz man news. We talked about how Donovan Mitchell is going to miss the game tonight here in Utah. Also, some news about him with some contract talks. He's not committing. There's a lot of it's up in the air. There's talk from the Cavaliers that Donovan Mitchell loves the city and they're having the talks at the very least. But Donovan said more or less there's other things to focus on right now.
Yeah, he said when the time comes, we'll get to it. But he didn't say, yes, I expect to sign a 4-year, $200 million extension with the Cavaliers. And maybe he just does. There's, mm-hmm. I'm not saying he wouldn't do it, but, man, they could get eliminated in the first round again this year. And then he's saying, like, yeah, I love Cleveland, but we're losing. I can love New York, which I do, and lose there if I have to. Like, I might as well be close to my people and his family who still live in the East Coast. So, I didn't expect him to sign a contract this offseason. I think if he waits until after his contract expires and becomes a free agent, he can sign, or he could re-sign with the Cavaliers for 5 years, $260 million, because he hits certain like bird rights things and eligibility there to stay there and make more money. But I just don't see him signing a contract extension. I would be surprised if he did, I guess, at this point. I wouldn't rule it out entirely because some guy, like, you know, Kawhi signed a contract extension with the Clippers and actually took less money to stay there. But he's an LA guy. He wanted to be in LA. That's why he went there in the first place. So we'll see if Donovan Mitchell does that. I'm not expecting it, and I do think the Jazz traded him to Cleveland on purpose with the idea that that was going to have a deadline, and the pressure was going to be on them to either win or trade him, and they're not necessarily winning a whole lot. In fact, they're only 10-13 since mid-February. They're a below 500 team for almost 2 months now.
Question for you. I don't think it's a question if it holds weight, but how much weight do you think the Cavs' performance in the upcoming playoffs will have on those contract talks?
I think it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. If they get eliminated in the first round again, it's going to get really hard, I think, for Donovan Mitchell to commit. Now, maybe he wants to make right and be like, hey, this is my fault. I want to be the star, and I'm supposed to lead us further. But like, you look around, you're like, well, you got to trade Darius Garland then and get us a better teammate. I said when they traded for Donovan Mitchell, man, they are betting a lot on Evan Mobley becoming a superstar mm-hmm. because Rudy Gobert was extremely good. And the Jazz had a very real cap on that roster, even with a great amount of talent around Donovan Mitchell, because Rudy was only so good.
Yeah.
Evan Mobley like has to turn into Anthony Davis for them to take this leap. And Evan Mobley is kind of, I don't want to say he's plateaued, but he has slowed his development. He has not become this do-it-all guy, I think, the way everyone expected. So I don't see the bright, bright future in Cleveland, like how they get to a title, especially because they don't own any of their draft picks. They all go to Utah.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing. That's a hard way to win when all your draft picks either go to the Jazz or are swapped to the Jazz. That's a hard thing to do.
Looking at the East playoff picture, if the playoffs started today, the Cavs would play the Pacers in the first round. I think of the Cavs as a much better team than Indiana, but the Cavs have 45 wins on the season and the Pacers have 43.
Yeah,
so
definitely
possible.
Let me pull this up. I just said that the Cavaliers are 10-13 since that date. Let me see. The Indiana Pacers are 13-8. So, like, think about a month and a half of the season going into the end of the year. Like, yeah, I think Cleveland should be a better team on paper. But the problem is, like, that's when Evan Mobley and Darius Garland came back. Remember, Darius Garland had, what, the jaw? Or maybe whatever. I mean, they were both beat up pretty seriously. And they came back, and the Cavs got worse.
Yep.
It's like, that's scary. They can't figure out what they're doing. Even Donovan Mitchell the other day after getting blown out in Denver said, yeah, how was it April? And we're still trying to figure this out. Like classic Donovan Mitchell stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Indiana's been better recently. So if Indiana were to beat them, that's the type of chaos you're probably rooting for if you're a Jazz fan, especially in Cleveland.
One more piece of Jazz news. Lauri Markkanen will likely miss the rest of the season with 15 days left in the season. They said that he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So he'll be reevaluated right before the season finale against the Golden State Warriors. But in all likelihood, we will not see Lauri again this season.
At that point, I guess there's a chance that the Warriors, have locked up the 10th seed in the West and aren't playing anybody. But it's not a home game.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're going to play Lowry on the road in a meaningless game if he's dealing with the shoulder injury. Yeah, I don't think we see Lowry again this season.
All right, you want to get into the mailbag?
Let's do it.
First up, we have a question from Cade Cottrell. What are the odds that one of Lowry or Sexton is moved for long-term assets but not both? I.e., do you see the Jazz selling high on one if the price is right, or would it more likely be both or neither?
I could absolutely see it happening. And he further elaborates. He says, really the question away whether the front office views all options as possibilities or if the franchise is more so split on a path of either trying to stay competitive or fully bottom out this offseason. The Jazz do not believe they can fully bottom out. I can tell you that I've heard from a very high-level person. They don't think they have – unless they trade everybody, they can't bottom out.
Yeah.
Like, they just do not believe they are going to be bad enough to be able to go out and try and get Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey next year. Like, they just have too much talent. They're too good to do that. And they recognize it. So in that sense, I don't see them trading both. Do I see them trading one or the other? I could see that if they say, hey, one step forward or one step back, two steps forward, which is very possible. You know, maybe you trade a Colin Sexton and you say, well, the idea of he and Keontae George in the backcourt probably doesn't make total long-term sense, and Colin might be too good to bring off the bench forever, but you can't start them together, which I'm not actually sure is true. You might be able to start them together. But if you can get three first-round draft picks for Colin all of a sudden because he's averaging 21-6 and shoots the heck out of the ball, and someone really needs that on a missing piece, it's like, yeah, okay, you can you could get a lot for Colin, and then you kind of keep this asset drive alive. Or you use Colin in the, you know, hypothetical superstar player trade, which, you know, Colin's already been used in once to get Donovan Mitchell. So he clearly has some of that cachet and he's on a great contract. So I could see it. I could see the Jazz splitting those two at some point, but I could also see them keeping them together. I wouldn't rule either out, which I think ultimately is Cade's question.
Next up from Tyler Galt. For most of the year, we've heard Keontae is the point guard of the future and he has star potential. But in the last couple weeks, I keep hearing people say he's probably a second unit guy and isn't big enough or strong enough to be a starter. Which is it?
I haven't seen that personally, and I don't believe that. Yep. I think he's a first unit guy. I still stand by. I could see him averaging 20 points per game next season. He ran out of gas. Like, the Jazz asked a lot of him. He has no legs left. That's why he's shooting a ton of threes. And they're not going in. Like, that's all leg stuff, right? Like, he's tired. He sees the end of the tunnel coming up here. He needs a break. Jazz have put a lot on him. He's played a lot of basketball recently. He needs a break. And then he needs to get into better shape. I don't worry about his size at all. Like,
yeah.
He has plenty of size to be a starting point guard in the NBA. And then I just think it's going to, you know, take further development and growth. And some of that is physical growth. Like, he's got to get stronger so he can withstand just being in the NBA and dealing with all those things. But, no, I'm certainly not on the train that Keontae George is going to be a backup player in the NBA. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And, like, looking at his minutes over the past couple games, like 37, 29, 40, 35, and then above 30 for almost every other game. So, yeah, definitely a legs problem. I wouldn't say it's the rookie wall. He probably hit that earlier in the season, but it's the end of the season, 82 games. I definitely don't think there's any problems with Keontae.
So he had this stretch where, let me see if I can pull it up just offhand here. I've got it up at Basketball Reference. It was probably even more games than this. He had a 17-game stretch where he was averaging 17 points, 5 or 6 assists, 3 rebounds. Here, I've got it up right now. 17 games. He made 11 starts. He averaged 16.8 points, 4.7 assists, and 3 rebounds. And he was shooting 46% from the floor and 43% from 3. And then he just absolutely collapsed. The 3-point shot went away. He started shooting 1 of 7 basically every game from 3, and he's not been the same. And that's really now over the last, let me see, I think it's 10 games, maybe it's 11 games. It's 10 games here. He doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. He just has totally hit the wall. To see that precipitous of a drop-off, shooting 18% from three. He was 46 for 17 games, down to 18%. Like, it just washed over him.
Yeah.
He just lost it. So, no, I'm not on the Keontae George as a future second-unit player. Is it possible? Sure.
Yeah.
But, no, I think he's going to be a much better player than that.
Next up from Jake, if you had to pick 8 players to protect in the expansion draft, who on the current Jazz roster would you protect?
Okay, this is tough. Let me pull up the Jazz roster right now, and I think there are some obvious ones. Again, the expansion draft meaning you don't get anything in return if you lose these players.
Yes.
Like, not, hey, these guys are untouchable, but if the NBA were to have Seattle and Las Vegas get teams, and you had to protect 8 players at the top that they couldn't pick off in an expansion draft, who would you take? Lowry's the obvious one. Keontae's number 2. Taylor Hendricks is number 3. I would even put Bryce Sensabaugh at number 4. I would still have Sexton in there. Sexton's probably higher than number four. Sexton might be number three behind Keontae or four behind Taylor Hendricks. But would I have five there? I would say Walker.
Yep.
Six. John Collins, seven. Do I have to get eight?
Yeah, right.
like in all honesty, and that's no disrespect to anyone else on the roster. I'm just trying to think of like who absolutely would you not want them to touch, understanding that the whole idea is that all these players are like trade fodder going forward. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're Chris Dunn is maybe the only other name that makes sense.
I was going to say Chris Dunn because even though he may be inconsistent with what he brings on a night-to-night basis, I think that the locker room presence that he has is huge.
Was that eight? Did I even get to eight? Or was that only six?
You were debating.
Colin Sexton,
yep.
John Collins, Keontae George, Chris Dunn, Walker Kessler, Lowry Markkanen, and then the rookies, the three rookies.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, that's eight.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually pretty clear. Those might be the eight players that are on the roster next year, and if only six of them are on the roster next year, that wouldn't stun me either.
Yeah.
Like, Chris Dunn might not be back next year. There's a very realistic chance Chris Dunn's not back next year. And the Jazz have liked him. He's not been particularly great the second half of the season. He will get offers to play somewhere else. And if it's more money than the Jazz want to pay, they'll let him go. I could see the Jazz wanting to keep some consistency around just because you don't want every year to be brand new all the time. And Chris Dunn, I think, can help you win in the right situations. But, yeah, that would be my eight. And I don't think there's anyone else really in the conversation that's that obvious.
Yeah.
Maybe, do you love Johnny Juzang? Like, I don't know. Maybe. He might be an NBA player. He might not. We will see.
Next up from the Gray Bambus, from the current roster, who do you think will play in the summer league?
All right, let's go down the list. I bet Keontae George is there. Mm-hmm. I think they want these guys to play.
Yeah.
Just play a lot. I'll be curious what Walker Kessler's summer is like. The Jazz want him to play basketball. They said that the other day. They just really want him to play a lot of basketball. He might be with Team USA in the reserve team. He might be in the summer league. What he will do one or the other, I would imagine. If he doesn't go to Team USA, I think the Jazz will ask him to come and dominate Summer League for a little while, which he should be able to do because he should be at that level. Luka Šamanić, maybe, if they think he's worth keeping around next year. Taylor Hendricks, definitely. Bryce Sensabaugh, definitely. Johnny Juzang, maybe. Micah Potter, maybe. Kyra Lewis, maybe. Jason Preston, yes. He's on the two-year, two-way contract, so I expect Jason Preston back. And then, yes, both Kenneth Lofton and Darius Bazley, probably. And then I think the interesting one, though, I've kind of told it's probably not going to happen, is the Procida kid that they got in the Simone Fontecchio trade.
Yes.
I kind of got the feeling, talking to somebody, that he probably won't be out of his contract and won't be able to play.
Okay.
But there was like a slim chance, but probably not.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I think those are the names. I mean, I don't think that I left off anyone obvious there. All the young guys. I guess the 50-50 would be like Walker and Keontae. And I would say if they can both play, let them both play.
Next up from Alex. Teased this a little bit last week. Alex is wondering if there's any more information on the rebrand.
Shout out to everyone who caught on to the rebranding news. We appreciate you listening to the podcast. That was certainly the most I've seen it aggregated since then. No. In all honesty, no. I will say I didn't have anybody come and tell me I was wrong. So I've told you these were loose rumors. I told you I was kind of blind on it. I almost didn't say anything because I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen a mock-up. Nobody inside the organization has said this is what it is and this is what it's going to be. I have heard it from people outside of the organization, what it might look like. I didn't have anyone inside the organization say you're wrong, which, by the way, if I was wrong, they would have told me.
Okay.
So that's what I will say. I don't think I was wrong based on the response I got. And that doesn't mean I know any more about it.
Yeah.
So
next up from Cam Young, what player archetype / skill should the Jazz target in the draft and free agency?
The Jazz could use somebody who really, this is going to sound like an obnoxious answer. They need more basketball IQ. Jazz are not a very smart team. They are not a very high basketball IQ team. And some of that's just like the rookies haven't played very much. So rookies generally don't have that high of IQ. But they could use some high IQ guys, just guys who like kind of process what's going on the court. Like the good teams, we talk about like the ball flying around the court. Well, that they're making quick decisions. So like Jokic is really smart. Aaron Gordon is really smart. Jamal Murray's a smart player. Like these guys know how to play the game and they kick the ball all around the floor. So if you can add smart players, like Kelly Olynyk was a really smart player.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz basketball IQ dropped significantly once Kelly Olynyk left the team. Simone Fontecchio, probably a pretty smart player too, and just has played so much basketball, he knows how it's played. So I think you can always use more basketball IQ, but also just like go get bigger.
Yeah.
And that's kind of funny because I may be the highest quote unquote like basketball IQ guy in the draft right now in the Jazz range, I would think is probably Reed Shepard at Kentucky, like just watching him play at Kentucky the few times I did this year. It's off the charts. Just like really smart defensively, always in the right place, like does things that are out of rhythm that you're like, why? I've never seen him do that before. It's like, oh, well, because he knows he can do certain things in certain situations, but doesn't just spam it. Just doesn't do it over and over just because it's something he's done before. Like, yep. He picks his spots really well. And also, he's like 6'2". And it's like, okay, well, so he's never going to be the starting point guard with Keyonte George on the team, so why would you draft him? Like, there's part of me that thinks that. And so it's like, well, go get the guy who's 6'8 and has good positional size, whether that's Cody Williams or Kyle Filipowski or Modest Bazalis or kind of all those guys. So again, my default probably is get big. Get big, get big. The good teams in the NBA are big. There's very few good little teams in the NBA. We will see if the Clippers win in the playoffs. We will see if the Thunder win in the playoffs. They're both really small. And if they get ousted, there's going to be a real clamoring for them to go and get big guys.
Yes. I think that basketball IQ is the perfect answer because when I look at the Jazz's biggest problems from this year, it's defense and turning the ball over.
Yeah, right.
And I think both of those are big, like rely on IQ a lot.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, guys who are reading the game right. And you know what? I mean, why were the Jazz so good with Mike Conley? Well, Mike Conley's got one of the five highest basketball IQs in the NBA. You know, he's up there with the best of the best. You know, he's not LeBron, but he's up there.
Yeah.
So get those guys out there who know how to play the game at a really high, know how to play the game at a really high level. That could help.
Next up, another one from the Gray Bambus. What would you like to see each of the rookies focus on improving the most during the offseason?
Probably conditioning is like just such a lazy one to say, but it's like, yeah,
it's big.
Bryce Sensabaugh was a really good shooter too, and then fell off a cliff. Like all of a sudden, he was playing 30 minutes a night. I asked him about this the other day. After the game, I said, like, do you just feel the 82-game season? He's like, it's crazy to not be able to, like, really scout an opponent. He's like, we play tonight. This was after the Rockets game. He's like, tomorrow we get on a plane, we fly to Sacramento, and then we play them on Sunday. It's like, college, you have 3 days to scout a team and prepare for them and get ready, and, like, you practice for that team. He's like, you never practice for the opposing team. You practice what you do. You've got a scouting report. You do some shoot-around walkthrough stuff of the sets they run, but, like, you're not planning for a team like it's the playoffs. So some of that's just like conditioning. They're exhausted. The length of that type of season is really hard. So I would like to see all those guys get in better shape. I saw Bryce Sensabaugh standing next to Dylan Brooks. And I've always tried to figure out like who has Bryce Sensabaugh's body in the NBA? It's Dylan Brooks. Mm. They're the exact same height. Dylan Brooks is in better shape. He's just like stronger. And he's a man. He's an adult, you know, and Bryce Sensabaugh's 20. When he's 23, he will look different. But, like, that's – oh, yeah, start to form your NBA body will really help those guys. Keyonte's probably – yeah, turnovers. I think Bryce Sensabaugh actually ball handling might be, like, the skill I would add the most for him because I think he can pass really well.
Yeah.
He's got to be able to get to places where he can get to the mid-range and then he can get to some of those spots where he can pass. If he could dribble, it would really help him. And he's not, like, a zero dribbler, but if he could go to, like, a plus dribbler – he gets pretty intriguing, I think, as a guy who can create his own shot. Taylor Hendricks is probably just, like, defensive footwork.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Which is really nitpicky, and I wouldn't even know it, like, the exact right time when I see it versus the wrong time when I see it. Like, a lot of that is high-level coaching nuance that I don't pretend to have. But some of that stuff of knowing where to guide guys to, navigating screens, etc. Keyonte's might be conditioning that allows him to just put in better effort on the defensive side of the ball.
Next up, from Utah Jazz News. Honestly, this is a breath of fresh air. This is completely opposite from what I've seen from a lot of Jazz fans. Do you think the Jazz try to win next year? If so, why would we rush it that fast?
Okay, I talked to somebody, and they said the goal for the Jazz, because there's been a lot of question about, like, what is the goal? It's get better. It was quite literally what they said, get better. So I do think they do want to win. Like, I don't think the Jazz are putting off winning, but they are waiting for opportune times to not spend their assets stupidly for Band-Aid situations. Like, they would love to add long-term pieces that help the core. And so I wouldn't rule that out. I kind of do think the Jazz are a little tired of this. I think you got to be careful once you start getting pieces in place about teaching them that losing is the right way to do it. Like, I do think at some point you want to expose them to some losing to get better picks, and then you want to rebound and get better. So I do think the Jazz try and get better next year. Do I think they will overpay for a mid-level player? I do not. I don't think they're going to do it at that cost. In fact, I would bet that they think they could probably get back to being a 500 team by adding some mid-level veteran assets if they had to with cap space. whether via, you know, trade and taking a player back into cap space or by signing a couple of guys. So they could be competitive next year. Yes, I think they will be better. Do I think they're going to artificially try and win 51 games by adding a bunch of 32-year-olds to the roster? I don't.
Next up from James Hardman, will the Jazz keep all three picks they currently have and go into next season with three new rookies?
No.
Simple as that.
Yeah, no. I didn't think they were going to do it last year, and they did. But, like, you're going to have seven players on your roster under the age of 23 when you include Walker Kessler, not to mention, you know, the Jason Prestons, who's actually a little bit older, but, like, Kenneth Lofton, some of these guys who might be on the roster next season. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to lose some of these veterans this offseason. I think you'll probably trade a couple of them. But you can't just have seven, eight rookies on the team or first and second year players on the team. I think that actually ends up being a detriment. I think they make their top 10 pick. In fact, maybe they try and package all their picks to move from like 8 to 6. If there's a guy there, just like, got to have him. That's the player we want. We'll give up three picks to get him. But otherwise, I think they use those picks to either get better or trade them for future draft picks and just kind of keep kicking that can down the road. But no, I see basically zero scenario where they have three more rookies on the team next year that aren't like two-way players.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you add a couple of different two-way guys because Micah Potter comes off the board and Johnny Juzang, his contract expires. So maybe you go out and get those types of rookies. And maybe that would even create an opportunity where you keep the 31st or 32nd pick that you got from Detroit and you make that pick, you know, but and you sign them to a two-way contract. That's possible. But no, I don't see three drafted rookies on the team next year.
Next up from Utah Nash. Why is Walker Kessler a shell of the player he was at this time last season? I have something for this. First off, let me say that where I think Walker's career is going from this point today, last year, is completely different. Like, definitely it is affected, but also I think it's noteworthy that progression in the NBA isn't always linear. I think that fans get caught up like, okay, he did this year one, he should be here year two and here year three, but it doesn't always work out like that.
This is a big summer for Walker. He's got to take some steps forward. Effort is an issue. Like, some of the games, it doesn't look like he's trying that hard. Like, Taylor Hendricks comes in and gets four offensive rebounds. It's like, Walker, you're bigger than Taylor, and you're closer to the basket. Like, you can get those. And you can, like, see, like, sometimes he's kind of moping. Like, so I think there's some engagement issues there. I think there's a sophomore slump and then the letdown that has come with that, which you have to overcome as a player. And the Jazz, I'm sure, have challenged him, and he hasn't always met that challenge. I think that's probably part of it. So, yeah, this is a huge summer for Walker. And, you know, Danny Ainge said one of the most interesting things that stuck out to me as soon as he said it, and he said it about Ochai, and he said it about Walker last year. He said, those guys' jobs were really easy because all we did was ask them to be who they were, and now it's on them to get better. And the Jazz, like, didn't cater an entire system to just do what Walker does well, and he didn't match. Now, it's also awkward that John Collins came in and plays basically the same position, and John Collins is much better as a five than he is as a four at this point in his career.
Yep.
Like, he's a pretty good center in right situations and has a higher overall production level right now than Walker Kessler does. Higher ceiling? I don't know. Maybe Walker could get there. But, yeah, you've got to figure out how to play him there. And then even in his backup minutes, like, he hasn't dominated the way beyond, like, a replacement-level backup center. And you're right. You know, like, he had some huge games. I remember the game that he had against Minnesota last year. He had a 20-20 game, right? Like, one in overtime, or at least maybe they lost in overtime, but it was 20-20.
Yeah.
He had a 30-point game last year. Like, he's not even close to that. He's, like, shooting 3 of 5 from the floor a lot of nights. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to a little bit more of what he was like as a rookie next year and just kind of tightens his game and says, these are my strengths. This is what I'm going to focus on. I'm not going to try and expand my game out further, which lowers his potential but might keep him in the league longer.
Next up from Jazz Time Jones, is Castle at UConn the same as Chris Dunn? His draft analysis sounds exactly the same as Dunn's did.
Not as quick. I mean, Chris Dunn is more like Dante Exum. Just like super speedy coming out of Providence and then kind of turned into Dante Exum, right? Like, they're very similar players. It's kind of funny. Chris Dunn's not quite as big as Dante, and Dante's come back from Europe and turned into a productive player on a good team, which I actually think is what Chris Dunn's future probably holds. Like, Chris Dunn should be the 8th or 9th guy on a team contending for a title, and that's probably the ideal spot for Chris Dunn in the NBA, who picks up a tough defensive assignment for 10 to 15 minutes, and if you leave him wide open, he's going to hit a three, but he's only going to take one or two a game, which is exactly what Dante Exum does right now. Castle is a little bit more ball in hand. He's a better passer. He's a really high-level defensive player. So there, I get the comparison to Chris Dunn. I think Castle's probably going to end up being a little bit more of a two in the NBA than Chris Dunn is. But yeah, if the shooting doesn't come along, it becomes a tough fit.
Yeah.
Like any guard. Like not guards who can't shoot just don't play in the NBA. It's just really hard to make it. Doesn't matter how many other things you do well, you've got to be able to shoot. So that will be the big issue for Castle. But yeah, I get the comp. I'd have to think of a better comp for him because I don't think Chris Dunn's identical.
Yeah.
So
next up, and ending off with a group of questions from Alex. This one's sort of similar to one we already answered, so I'll get it out of the way first. This summer, do you prefer or think the Jazz try to swing a big trade and go for it with Lowry, or trade Lowry and Sexton for future assets and try to get a top pick in next year's draft?
I don't see that.
Yes.
I don't think the Jazz are going to trade Lowry Markkanen. Not this summer.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, I think they're going to trade him in 2 years. Is that possible? Sure. If they get to a point where they say, Lowry's not progressing, or he's even regressing or something, and you've got to take a step back, maybe then. But Lowry's really good. Yeah. Lowry's a very high-level player, and when you put – I don't know if you quote-unquote build around Lowry, but you can play him on any roster. Again, like the comp that I didn't really like, the first person I saw doing it was Tony Jones. He kind of said Klay Thompson. I was like, huh, really? I mean, Klay's a great defensive player, so that doesn't apply at all. But it's like, well, like, you know, Klay – just catch and shoot over and over and like just kills you with spacing over and over and over. Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, actually, I do want that guy on my team. Like everybody wants Klay Thompson offensively, who's going to take 8 threes a game and make 5 of them a lot of nights. Okay, you can absolutely use that guy. And he can be a number 2 scoring option on a really good team.
Yeah.
So maybe actually, yeah, you just keep Lowry around, but you don't build around him the way you didn't build around Klay.
Yes.
You know, you had Draymond and you had Steph. And you kind of had to find the right guys around him. Well, having a player as good as Klay Thompson allows you to have a non-shooter on the floor like Draymond Green, as long as you have, what? We just talked about it, really high basketball IQ players.
Yes.
They have hugely high IQ basketball players on the team. Steph has a high IQ. Draymond has one of the highest in the NBA. So you then can have those Lowry Markkanen types who just play off those guys. That's really where Lowry's value probably comes in.
Last question here from Alex. Who are you eyeballing for the 9th pick?
Man, again, first of all, it's kind of strange. It's going to be all over the place. Yes. I will be curious who's available at that point. And, you know, maybe the Jazz move into the top 4. I mean, that's certainly possible. It's like a 25% chance if they finish with the 8th worst record. Cody Williams from Colorado falling was kind of projected as a top 4 pick for a lot of the season. And these other names that are still playing have jumped up. He didn't close the season particularly strong. Brothers Jalen Williams from OKC. Generally, those guys who have DNA already in the NBA, like they kind of make it. They kind of figure it out. He's got great size. Colorado's had a weird run of actually putting some decent players in the NBA. So that would be the obvious name. He's just like a wing. The NBA is trending towards 6'8 athletes that if they figure it out, their star level is actually a lot higher than maybe they were even drafted. And his brother's a good example. Was a really good player in college. Went to a smaller school, a little bit overlooked. Oh, man, his skills exploded at the NBA level. Like, maybe you just hope that Cody Williams channels 75% of that, and if that's the case, you've got a big body, he's a good athlete, he's a good defender, who knows the game because of his brother. Like, okay, I can work with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a home run swing, but I can work with that.
Two players that I really like, I said one of them last time, Dalton Knecht and Bouzelas. Those are two that I think would fit well with the Jazz.
Knecht steps in and plays right away.
Yep.
He doesn't do a lot of the thing like other. He's a great shooter, though.
Yes.
Like, he's going to be in the NBA. He's just an unbelievable shooter. He's a pretty good athlete. And actually, once he gets into space and isn't the best player on the floor, like doesn't have to be the best guy, his game could really explode. So, and then Bouzelas, yeah, he's 6'10". He's super athletic and he's got to put on weight, but the star potential is there.
Yep. Thank you guys for tuning into the Jazz Notes podcast. A little bit of a preview for you. As the season wraps up in the coming weeks, we're going to be doing some end-of-season awards, probably some sort of season recap and an off-season preview.
Yeah, we'll do some off-season previews. We'll even do maybe a player-by-player breakdown of the season they had with the Jazz and what we think their off-season will look like. Always subscribe, like the podcast. We appreciate when you do that. Follow us on Twitter @BensHoops, @ChandlerHolt KSL, and @KSL Sports. We'll be back next week.